listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello there, and thank you so much for joining us here today for Get Yourself the Job on LA Talk Radio. I'm Jennifer K. Hill, and of course, we have Brandon Maslin here with us, my fabulous and wonderful co-host. And we're in the midst of a special series that we've been doing since January 1st, 2021, of everything that you need to know to get hired from A to Z when it comes to job hunting. And if you joined us last week, we actually did a full mock live interview with a job seeker and provided her feedback on each of her interview answers. So if you're the sort of person where sometimes you like to see how somebody else does it, I know it can be a little bit easier to watch somebody get feedback live. So I invite you to go back and check out last week's episode. Today, before we get started on exploring body language, how to read the room, and giving a perfect pitch, I want to first thank our sponsors, the people over at Markham Search LLC. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, including temporary services, executive search, and payrolling options. So please do keep them in mind for all of your recruitment need. So today, Brandon, let's have you kick it off, my friend, as we explore this incredible topic, which could be as important, if not more important, than everything else we've talked about thus far, which is how do we create the perfect pitch for an interview, for your tell me about yourself statement, and more importantly, how do you read the room and know what the room wants? Because how you're going to pitch one room is completely different than how you're going to pitch another room. So what's your first thoughts on that, my friend?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, shout out to our awesome guest last week, Jean. And one thing that I picked up from listening to her is that she had practiced. You know, she's a brilliant worker, and there's a lot of qualities that I admired about her. And one of the things I admired was that she put the work in. And I think not enough people put the work into resume, to interview, to pitch. So practice number one, that is key, is making sure, you know, it takes a lot of practice to sound casual when it comes to the pitch. So we're going to talk about this today, which is a great pitch isn't the same from person to person. It's tailored to the audience. So your pitch should never sound exactly the same if you're doing it perfect. So that's tip number one. And tip number two is someone's got to be invested in it. It's got to resonate. Once again, back to that person, the audience, it's got to solve a problem they have or a problem they know someone else they know has, right? Because it's not always, so often when you're networking, it's not that you're going to work with the person you're talking to, but they might know someone that needs your services.
Hmm. Yeah, and it's so funny, Brandon. I want to apply this to the broader audience out there who might not even know that this show is for them. I recently transitioned into the startup world and learning about how to pitch VCs and how to, if you're ever trying to raise money for your business, it is actually extremely similar to pitching yourself in an interview. So actually, and come to think of it, I'm going to expand it one step further. It's also similar to pitching yourself in a date. Now, do we want to be pitching ourselves in a date? Yes and no, but I say this because everything we do in life, whether or not we realize it, is a pitch. Now, it can be an authentic pitch that comes from your heart that communicates what you want to communicate with compassion and resonance, or you can sit there going, like somebody the other day said to me, oh, you're really good at sales. And I went, ew, don't tell me that. That's terrible. I don't want to be the person who's good at sales. That gives me the creepy crawlies. So rather than resisting being good at something, embrace it and know that knowing how to speak to an audience, you can call it selling, you can call it pitching, or you could call it being authentically compassionate. What that's going to do is that's going to create a certain resonance between yourself and whoever you're speaking with, whether it's via Zoom or in person or another online platform. When you're able to connect and to create that synergy, that rapport, that je ne sais quoi, that something, that is what's going to have you get fundraised, get hired, and receive the things that you want in life. So we invite you, as we explore this topic today, if you're with us live on the Facebook Live page, you might see me look down on occasion throughout the show. It's always to check for any live comments that you might have as we go through the show. So if you have comments or questions, to the best of our ability, we work on answering those live during the show. So thanks for tuning in and being here with us. So Brandon, what are some other tips for pitching when it comes to how to interact with someone in an interview?
Yeah, I mean, an interview is an interesting one. One of the keys to a great pitch is you don't want to ask too many questions, but you don't want to ask no questions. You know, so much of a pitch is based in, and Jennifer, you alluded to this, is interaction. Right? You mentioned a good example, actually, is weirdly the date. Weird as much as it is, because people often will say, and this is true for business too, how you treat the waiter or how you treat the staff, people will be judging you by things we don't think about. The other thing that I love from Match.com, and I use a lot in business actually, it's Match.com study, where men were trying to figure out why they weren't getting second dates. And they read the study that said, if he asked questions, so all the men went and asked questions, but only 10% of the men got second dates. That's because only 10% of the men did this very simple thing where the second question they asked was related to the response of the person. So most people just had their questions. And I think that what we miss in a pitch so often, if you've ever been pitched to, comes a lot, pick up the phone. Hi, can we tell you about your cable? Hey, can we do this? Can we do that? There's a tonality. You don't care about me. I don't matter. I am an N of zero to you, right? You're not invested in me. It's why people have second dates on the question be related to the statement the person made. It's the same thing in pitch. You want to really get into the room, find out what matters to the interviewer, and start there. So first thing I would advise, if you're in an interview, look around, take in your surroundings. Notice if they're having a good day or a bad day. Sometimes start there. Start from, start as a human so often. You know, if you just blow through your pitch at someone and they're having a rough day, they're not going to listen to you. Sometimes one of the best things you can do, some of the longest term clients I've had, friends I've had, certainly as a lawyer, I use this a lot. You know, someone would come in and they would just be angry, and especially in law, they'd be angry. And I would just call it like, what's going on? Why are you so angry? Because you're clearly pissed. And they would just go, ah. I go, that sounds awful. I'm sorry that's happening to you. Right? But what am I doing? I'm pitching myself as an empathetic ear. And most people, especially in law, they just wanted you to fight for them. You're there, in your pitch, you're trying to figure out what problem you're trying to solve. So I'd start with, what's the problem of the person you're talking to?
So brilliant, Brandon. I really love what you said. It's about reading the room and noticing, and this is something almost like spiritual quasi, is can the person, it's not even spiritual, it's just being a good human being. Can the person receive what I'm about to share with them? And by clearing the space and calling out the elephant in the room and saying, hey, it seems like you might be angry. Do you want to share about that? Oftentimes, whether you're with an interviewer who's masculine or feminine, and now I'm not saying male or female, a woman could be in her masculine energy or a man could be in his feminine. But either way, the masculine energy is going to want to vent and get it out. And it's very helpful just to agree with it, where the feminine, it's kind of like the feminine's energy, the bucket is filled to the brim, or the trash, and you almost have to like take out the trash. Wow, is there anything else? Is there anything else? And to Brandon's point, like you keep asking that and giving people the opportunity to clear their space. Because imagine, oftentimes when people are in the interview process, they might have 5 back-to-back interviews scheduled. You don't know what's going on with their children or perhaps a breakup that just happened. We never know what's happening in another person's world. So the best we can do is to be compassionate and to listen for what they need, and almost imagining, asking from your heart to the other person's heart, are you available to receive this, whatever it is, and to pause. Because so often one of the biggest mistakes I see across all interviews, and this includes many of the TV and radio interviews I've done with my guests, is that the people will continue to blah, blah, blah without pausing to see how it's landing, see how people are relating to it. If you notice, you want to pay attention to the body language and to the cues of the person. For example, if you're talking at someone, wah, 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 And you notice that your interviewer, whether it's in person or even in a Zoom setting, you can see if somebody is leaning back. And so if somebody begins to lean back like this, that means that they can't receive what you're sharing with them. Now, on the flip side, this is super powerful. If you notice that you're sharing something and you're creating these spaces, these pauses, and the person begins to lean in, you can tell that from a structural body language standpoint, they're fascinated by what you're saying. And the way to remain engaging and interesting in an interview is to create spaces and pauses. So if I may, Brandon, I'd love to share a pitch technique that I used, learned years ago, that's been one of my favorite pitch techniques that I still use to this day. You game?
Yeah. Okay.
So there was a technique, there was a program I had done with Jesse and Charlotte Jacobs about 10, 12 years ago, and they gave kind of the perfect pitch. And they said the essence of the perfect pitch is you want to think about who is the person that you solve a problem for? What is the problem that you solve? And in what time frame do you solve that problem? Now, this could be a business pitch if you're pitching a potential investor. This could be an interview pitch. This could be a date pitch. And I'll give you the example that I had done years ago when I participated in this program. So I would say, you know how, so you could say this kind of, you know how X, you know how, and this was in probably 2009, I did this program, you know how tens of millions of job seekers around the world are unemployed right now. Pause. Well, what I do is in less than 3 months, I help them to find their dream job in an industry that they love. Pause. Now, notice you're creating these spaces. Then what I immediately do is I immediately flip it back to the person who I'm having a conversation with or interviewing with to test and see how sticky was what I just said. So notice I only gave a little taste of the milk. I didn't give the whole cow. And I'm giving them a taste. And then I say, oh, tell me more about you. Tell me why you like working here. So if you're doing that in an interview, then you immediately pivot after that. And then you say, tell me more about you and how long you've been at the organization. Here's what's amazing. This is your litmus test in the middle of the interview. If you say, oh, tell me more about you, and the interviewer then says, wait, I want to go back. You just said this really interesting thing over here about how you solve this problem. How do you do that? That's how you know that you have a sticky pitch that people want to know more about. So you want to leave them wanting more. And there's so many different ways that you can do this. And every time you do this and people ask further questions, you know that you said something that stuck with them that was memorable in a positive way.
Beautiful. That's perfectly said. I would say, so what's sticky? You know, what sticks in people's minds? There's numbers, statistics you can give. There's anecdotes you can give. Jennifer, when someone says something to you and it sticks with you, what's going on?
So when somebody says something to me and it sticks with me, it's because I feel like it's authentic. I think authenticity, I remember we did an interview a couple of months ago maybe, and the person we were interviewing said authenticity is more important than your resume, than anything, and we have to assume that authenticity is in the job description. I think that who we're being is more important. Like, for example, if I just said that thing to you, if I just said, you know how, boom, boom, guy, you know, you're like the sleazy car salesperson. And you're like, ew, I don't want to be with that person. So that's going to be sticky in a, like a tar or a gum on the bottom of your foot. You do not want to be the gum on the bottom of somebody's proverbial foot in an interview where you're thinking to yourself, oh God, that person was just, I just want to get them off of me, get off my shoe. You know, so you don't want to be that fake, salesy, inauthentic person. You want to be authentic. I think that sharing from your heart, one thing I often tell job seekers that allows them to embrace the sticky authenticity side of themselves is I will first ask them to share about something they love. I've seen this happen with thousands of job seekers before an interview, where they feel weird. They get kind of awkward because they don't want to talk in an interview about themselves. And so then they kind of shut down, or they come across like stumbling over their words. So what I would encourage somebody to do in that situation is, right before you step into the interview, right before you go up the elevator, or if it's at home, right before you pop on that Zoom call, talk to somebody in your life about something you love. I remember one time somebody loved scuba diving. So they were in my office and we were practicing interviewing. And I said, listen, before you answer any interview questions, tell me about what you love most. Tell me about scuba diving. And the person's whole demeanor changed. And then when I said, tell me about yourself, or why should we hire you, the pitch came from a place of open-heartedness, where they were really, truly excited because they were already in that frequency of talking about something they love. So I invite you to think about something that you love when you're going this direction. And Michelle had a really great point here on Facebook as well. She had said, think before you speak. I think that is so important for all of us to remember, is pause, the act of pausing. Pause and ask, can the person receive what I'm about to say? And what is the best way for me to share what I'm about to share? And then to continually check in. Say if you're monologuing and you've been talking for 30 seconds or longer, you want to pause, allow a breath, and see if the person is still engaged in what you're saying. And if not, turn it back to them and ask a question to them to break up the flow and to allow it to go back in another direction.
Yeah, and I think that's where tonality matters so much. If you're not excited, the person won't be. I heard an expert storyteller once talk about the art of storytelling as it relates to the pitch. And one of the things he said is, the reason you get bored listening to someone is because they're bored of telling the story. It's actually one of the dangers of having a great pitch, is if you tell it so many times, you're going to get bored telling it. And guess what? So is your audience. And so if you've ever been in those situations where someone's rattling on, it's usually a story they've told before. We rarely rattle on if it's the first time we're saying something. We're usually more excited. Now, again, the goal with a pitch is to practice it. So you really don't want, you know, it's, let's use the analogy of baseball for one second. You don't want one pitch. You don't want to just have a fastball. You don't want to have a slider. You want to throw different pitches. You want to keep the person on their toes. They also want to make them be able to hit it. But I think one of the things that Michelle makes is such a good point is that pause, space for them to interject. I hate being talked at. You know, it's funny. I'm from the East Coast, and one of the things that I do miss sometimes, I joke around my wife, where she's like, how was that conversation with that? You know, when you're a dad, they just always try to make you friends with other dads. And I'm like, you know, actually more and more, I'm like, oh, it's great. We just talk to add each other. I miss that. I miss not having to carry the conversation. But on the flip side, I don't know if I would like that as much in business. I like that maybe in my personal life. In business, I want someone who's engaged with me, who's listening to me, who's the back and forth. The other thing is, you know, one thing we do, by the way, so a lot of times the way we're pitching ourselves. Now, things shift in code because it's going to be, if you see a job description online you're interested and you know someone who works at that company, you're going to pitch yourself that person on LinkedIn and say, hey, I noticed this opportunity in your company. Would you be willing to, right? You're going to be asking for a favor. Give them a good reason to say yes. Make it easy on them. If you write out what they can say, they're more likely to pass it along. But the traditional way, before we get into the virtual actually, is the traditional way you run into someone in the elevator or standing in line or whatever, right? As I like this, you know, one of the jokes we used to say at my old company was have an elevator pitch, an escalator pitch, and just in case a sidewalk pitch. What that means is a 15-second or a 30-second or a 3-minute, right? I mean, you want to make sure you don't know how much time you're going to have. And what happens so often is we meet someone we admire or respect. And what do? It's human condition. We run up that person, we go, oh my God, I'm so excited to meet you. I've been wanting to meet you for a long time. I admire you so much and I respect this about you so much. And you are so great. And the person walks away and they walk away and they think, I am great. I'm glad they admire me. No idea who they are. We get so busy being effusive towards the individual that we fail to be effusive about who we are. Now, the reverse is worse. Don't be effusive about just why you're great. At the very least, that person will like you, but they won't remember you. And I got to tell you, Jen, I'm actually more okay with someone being remembered for the wrong reason then the right reason, because at least they're remembered. Not being remembered is the great curse. Now, I guess there's an argument to be made about a really bad first impression, but the point is you want to make an imprint. I still remember the worst pitch I ever got was from Bill Smith, a divorce lawyer, who shook my hand with a sweaty palm and said, "Divorce lawyer, Bill Smith, call me if you need me," and walked away. And I always say that was the worst pitch I've ever gotten. It made me not want to be a domestic lawyer for the majority of my career, but right before I stopped practicing, I was. And I always say my pitch was very different than Bill's. It was, "This going to be the worst time in your life, or at least close to it. It's going to be really hard. My goal is not to be the lawyer who fights hardest for you and makes it any more difficult. I'm just going to try to make this painful process as painless as possible." The point is, you want to say what matters to that individual. You got to find out, you got to ask questions.
Yeah, and it's about, well, going back though to reading the audience too, first impression matters. And Michelle just shared that online, which is so important. I think the other thing that you want to think about is know the audience of the culture of where you're interviewing. Imagine that you go to interview in a startup culture place. Like, imagine it's the next quasi Google or Uber or whatever it might be. And you show up in a full-blown suit and tie or whatever that equivalent might look like, very prim and proper and conservative in the video interview or in person. There's going to be a mismatch culturally between what they're expecting and what you're expecting. You also don't want to be too extreme, but I know that in many, many startup cultures that it's going to be more of an alternative or more laid back sort of vibe. So you want to dress a step up from the audience so you can make a great first impression. And again, even with Zoom right now, it's so important. What can you do? Like, I personally like to wear a pop of color. I find that helps. I remember there was a gentleman in the legal industry who always wore a bow tie to any meetings. And that was something that had him stand out in a very positive way. And I think it's though, so much of it is, we talked in one of the earlier episodes this year, as far as what matters most is the energy. It's the energy of, do I want to spend time with you? Is the time flying by during this interview? Is it somebody who I want to have future conversations with? I remember when I ran my last company, I had a rule of thumb that I would never do business with someone who I wouldn't have over to my house for dinner. And this was true across the board. So if I wouldn't have you to my house for dinner, I would just say, you know what? I don't think I'm going to be the best resource for you. So you want somebody that, listen, we're spending a huge amount of our time with people in the business world. So you want to make sure it's a fit for you and for them. Also notice, like, what are the values? What values matter to you? What cultural values to you? And if having a warm, authentic environment is important, and you notice in the interview that the interviewer is not providing that, that they might be cold or withdrawn, it could be that they're having a bad day and you might want to give them a second chance. Or it could be that that relates to the culture of the company. Because I've often found too that the higher up you get in roles, that the individuals at the top level have a trickle-down effect to the other individuals in the company. And so if you have somebody who's very cold in a certain way at the top, chances are a lot of the management might be following suit there. And so there's that sort of culture that you get, versus if you have somebody who is more warm and effusive, then that also kind of creates a different culture.
I love what you were talking about with that trickle. I mean, I believe that's one of my favorite sayings is, I don't believe in trickle-down economics, but I believe in trickle-down inspiration. It has to come from the top. I've said this on past episodes. You can talk about the elevator pitch, but it's your first impression. To Michelle's point, I judge almost every company I walk into by how happy the receptionist is. She's miserable. Chances are the company's miserable. It's funny. My wife is a brilliant heads of comms, just one of the most just amazing humans you'll ever meet, plus one of the best at her job, hard stop, in the world. And I remember she was interviewing for, when we left LA, getting out of entertainment, she was interviewing at all the big tech companies. And I remember listening to her, I was like, it just seems off. Something's weird about like the way she's interviewing. It doesn't sound like her. And the next time I found her, she was sitting like Indian style on our floor, laughing, having a great time. And that's a job she got. And I knew she was going to get, I knew it. I know her so well. You know, she was talking about Mattel's Barbie of all things, but she was talking about the marketing campaign that Mattel was doing. And they've done really innovative things, and she's in marketing and comms. And the point of the story is the company that she interviewed with, to remain nameless, is honestly one of the worst cultures. Everyone I've ever known who's worked there has been miserable. They've left. And I'm like, thank God. Thank God she couldn't fake it. You know, be authentically you. As I've said before, if you're doing a great pitch, failing at what you're not meant to do may be your great success. You want to give a pitch so authentic that you want to not be wind up in the wrong environment or the wrong business partner. You want to attract. So one last thing, or one more thing that I really think is important is if you pitch yourself to individuals, you're only pitching yourself to one. What you want is advocates and ambassadors. You want to find people and do such a good job pitching that they know how to pitch you. They know how to advocate for you. They know how to be your ambassador. Make sure that you give people the verbiage and the language, and do not be afraid to ask. So often what happens is we pitch and they go, I'm not interested. And you go, okay, but you know what you should say? I totally get that. Do you know anyone who might be? I would say 80% of the time you'll see them think and go, you know what? I do. I know someone who might be interested in your service, or at least know someone you should talk to. Don't be afraid to ask, who else should I be talking to? So those are sort of the other pointers. And then virtually email, last thing. If you're going to do an email outreach, please personalize it. Please make it personal. Anything that you can say about the individual or the day even. If they're in the Bay Area and it's raining, say, can you believe this rained today? But it'll just be like, oh, this is, yeah, I can't. It's nuts, right? You're already creating an instant reaction. The more personal you can make it, the better the pitch.
Yeah, you know what I just remembered, Brandon, is from like a VC pitch standpoint, which also works equally as well for interviewing, you know, to have yourself stand out from the crowd. There's a website called BombBomb, B-O-M-B, that allows you to create these 30-second to one-minute clips that you can send via LinkedIn to a potential company or to, if you have their email, to their email about why somebody might want to hire you. And I guess those have been having huge, really viral rates. And it's about innovating right now. I think that's what companies are looking for, is people to innovate. And a couple of things that came to me, Brandon, as you were speaking. One is from another body language standpoint, that things you can do, even if it's via Zoom, is something I was taught years ago, is that when your head is perpendicular, when your head is straight up and down, that from a neuroscience standpoint tells the person who you're speaking with, I'm taking you seriously. What you're saying matters. And this is so embarrassing. But years ago, I didn't know this at the time. If you tilt your head to the right or tilt your head to the left, it almost comes across like, number one, you're not taking them seriously. But number two, it can come across as flirtatious inadvertently. I remember I was probably 23 or 24 years old in one of my first recruiting jobs ever. And I sat down with the two partners who owned the recruiting company. And it was like review time. And they're like, so Jay Hill, we need to talk to you because we feel like you're flirting with people in the office. And, you know, you might want to stop doing that. I was like, what are you talking about? I have no idea. What do you mean? And so you don't even realize how your body language, or if your arms are crossed, if you're crossing your arms like this in an interview, you're pushing people away energetically. So it can be very valuable to imagine sitting up straight, having a tiny lean in on your end, head perpendicular, arms and legs open, and then thus you're inspiring open body language. That way people feel safe and comfortable with you. Any thoughts on that on your end, Brandon?
Yeah, 100%. We talk about this a lot, actually. One of the things that women are disadvantaged versus men is women are more polite. And where that gets women into trouble, actually, historically, is board meetings. And what women will do is they'll all sit like this. And what they won't do is they'll sit like this and they'll turn their head. And the reason they do that is what they've shown is because they're polite and they don't want to turn their back on the person right behind them. Dudes, first thing they do, nobody else matters, the CEO. I'm with you, man. I'm going to alpha dog you. And what they've shown is people will say things like, well, they don't seem as strong or assertive. And then all of a sudden, there's a great company story for elevator pitch and body language. They used to do all their interviews around a big table. And the CEO and all the people would be like, I don't know. There's something missing. I can't explain it. And they wind up going 90% guys versus women. And then this head of HR, to her credit, figured it out. And she goes, we're going to do it in our auditorium. It was more intimidating, right? And I think that's actually good, because I think these guys who are used to couldn't do anything. You're just sitting on stage in a chair. Everyone else is in the stands. You're talking to them 50%, 50%. And you know what the CEO said? Something about this class. They were a lot more locked in, dialed in. No, they weren't. They were just exactly the same. You just gave them an environment. So environment matters. Turning your chair matters. All these subtle cues matter so much. I didn't know about the tilting my head. I do it all the time. So no wonder everyone thinks I'm kidding. But all of these things play in. That's why the pitch is so fascinating. It's why the ones that work, work so well. My friend Yijen, who owns a company called Human that she started, has just such a good pitch. First time I met her, it's a great pitch, great product. It's you know, sound bites for coaches to connect with their audience. And, you know, one of the things that geeked me out, she talked about connection. And that's a nerded topic for me. It's just connection. She also talked about limited time. I mean, I am an evangelist for the for Peloton. And you know why? Because it fits into my schedule. That's it. That's all there is. I didn't want it. I don't need it. My wife convinced us to get it. I'm glad we have it. I mean, it's just the point is, I'll tell everyone to get it for various reasons. Same thing, by the way, for shows, TV shows. I don't like wasting my time. So if I find one I like, watch it. I mean, my point is, you know what? I never thought about this. You want to think of yourself like a good Netflix or Amazon Prime TV show. You want to be so good and create such a great experience that everyone goes, stops everything they're doing and just talks about you nonstop. You have to meet this person. They're amazing. It's going to blow your mind. I mean, you're going to see the world differently. It's going to fill in the blank. I mean, that's literally how I'd like people to be thought of in a weird way. When people that as excited talking about Ted Lasso or Bridgerton as they are about a great paralegal or C-suite executive. I mean, I want the same, right? It's not just emotion we use. It's emotion that people use when they speak of us. One other trick that I think is so important about pitch. So often, especially for VCs, you're not just pitching to one VC. You're pitching to a lot of people in a room. And one of the things I used to do, I've done, let's call it 300, I've done 300 trials, let's call it 500 trainings, and that's probably 20,000 people. One of my things I used to do, though, was because I was a trial attorney first, I needed to win the judge over, or I couldn't lose a jury member. So I'd focus on the person who wasn't having a good time and make sure they did. That worked well as a trial attorney, worked terribly as a corporate speaker. Because I would change my tone to meet the person who was having none of it. And guess what? They might have just been having a bad day. So often I was talking about diversity and inclusion, and they were against that, right? So for some reason or not. Or it was whatever was going on with them. And I would lower myself to meet them. And years ago, I was at a lawyer's retreat. And I'm watching this guy, and he's angry. He's angrier and angrier. He's got the mic. And finally, I went, I don't have to talk to this person anymore. And I ignored them. And I ignored them for the entire time. And the next four or five, in this case, men who spoke, were positive, who were vulnerable, who were real. And that was the future of that company. And I realized we had one of the best trainings I've ever had. And that changed my life. That changed my life 4 years ago. Just to realize I don't need to engage with the person who's having the worst time in the audience. I need to engage with the people who are having the best time. And hopefully I can win those other people over. Because that person has a bad time. It's probably, but what we do is we change ourselves. We change our dynamics. We're not going to win them over. We're not. They don't like us for some weird reason, or they have nothing to do with us, right? Bullies are great at this. Bullies are great at making whatever they're going through all about you. That's how they thrive. And if you play into that, believe me, your pitch is going to go, you're right. Okay.
Yeah. I think that's so powerful, Brandon. And the funny thing, we keep talking about pitch. What is dawning on me is the other aspect of pitch is actually the pitch of a voice. So one of my teachers I've been working with for 7 years, he works with Tony Robbins and Pierce Brosnan and all these incredible people. One of the things that I learned from him in his book, Vocal Leadership, and working with him is that people are not taken seriously if they end their sentence on an upward, hold on, I'm going to try and do it, on an upward inflection. Like if I'm speaking and I say something to you, you know what? I am the best recruiter that you're ever going to work with. Notice that I'm putting a downward accent at the period at the end of the sentence. However, something often millennials can do, and this is me, I'm actually on the millennial cusp, is that we, for whatever reason, we end on an upward inflection like this, and it makes you seem less authentic and less relatable. So at a very, very subtle level, the pitch, the lower our pitch, the deeper our resonance, the more authentic that we come across and the more that people are going to trust you and want to be around you. Because if somebody is talking really high and quick like this and there's no pitch and they're ending on upward inflections, then you can't even hear what I'm saying. Like it's a totally different vibe. And I used to speak that way. It's taken me 7 to 10 years of working with coaches like Arthur to work on being in my heart and resonance rather than having this super heady, high pitchy voice that, you know, doesn't have people resonate with me as much. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, it's neuroscience. It's also sadly unconscious bias, but it's what exudes executive presence, right? It's why it's how vulnerable people are with this. It's why Elizabeth Holmes was so successful, because she told like this, and all of a sudden you can make Theranos like a $1 billion company just by talking lower, basically. Actors though will call it your diaphragm, right? You know, audience, whoever is listening, they can do this. They can just put their hand right here on their chest, right below. Breathe in and breathe out. And you're going to feel it rise. And if you speak from there, you know, you're going to boom and you're going to present. It is. It's all neuroscience. It's how we sit. It's how we speak. It's how we convey. But I do believe that even if you have the upward lift, they call it, right? It's my old CEO says, it's like everything ends in a question. Or, you know, the Kardashian, which is a vocal fry, you know, which is very popular too. Even if you have that, it's okay. You can do all that as long as you are authentic, as long as you are confident in that which you speak about. So what you really need to do, number one lesson for pitch, is believe it. Believe it. Know it. Know that before you speak that you are the best person to help whoever you're talking to or whoever they might send to you. That's number one. Number two, ask questions. I'm going to say it again, because then you can tear your pitch and be like, oh, I'm glad you asked that. Whatever it is, I'm glad you asked that. Let me tell you why. Number three, you want to make sure, yes, that you're paying attention, but you're speaking slow and giving space. And I think one of the things that people miss in a good pitch is that they're so busy thinking about all the other things I just told you that they forget that the most important thing is just to get it out there. You miss 1,000% of the shots you don't take. So take the shot. There's no right way. So one of the things I hate about the whole five ways of this or four ways of that or three ways, I joke around, if there's 10 ways to lose weight and I don't lose weight, I feel bad. But it just might not be right for my body type. Or whatever it is. Guess what? There's no right way or wrong way to do the pitch. There is only your way. And that's why you've got to practice.
So I'm going to counter you on this, Brandon, because I think that, you know, you said there's no right or wrong way to do a pitch. I agree in some sense. And I would also invite people to consider that who you're pitching is as important as what you're saying to the person you're pitching. So say, for example, there was an article I'd read many years ago that stuck with me, and I used it in all the recruiting and business meetings I went to. It was the concept of emerald, ruby, sapphire, and pearl personalities. And I use this in recruiting and sales calls. And so each of these personalities, it's kind of like disc profiling or color profiling. You have the ruby, who is the executive, who is big and important and likes flashy things and go, go, go. That's the ruby personality. You have the emerald personality. The emerald personality is often more quiet, more inquisitive, needs time and energy to process things, and is more internal than external. You have the sapphire. The sapphire is like, la, la, party over here, and just kind of all over the place. They can be a lot of fun to work with. It's fun, fun, fun is what matters to them. And then finally, you have the pearl personality. And the pearl personality can often be somebody who's in a supportive role in a company. They're the ones who hold everybody up, who really, you know, they can be a little bit on the quieter side. And so I say this because if you're interviewing with, say, a CEO, and that CEO is a ruby personality, and boom, 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 you're going to want to pitch them in a different way than you would an emerald personality. An emerald personality, you're going to want to make sure you have your facts laid out. You're going to want to make sure that you present those facts in a clear, concise way. You're going to want to pause and create lots of opportunities for questions, because an emerald always has many, many questions. Versus with a ruby, you're going to want to be down, dirty, boom, 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 boom. And same thing with a pearl. A pearl needs to feel known and seen and heard in order to create that deep intimacy. So with a pearl, the best way to do it, when you're pitching them is to find out and even ask questions about them. If they say, tell me about yourself, share a little something and then ask more questions about them. Allow the pearl to feel safe with you so they can come out of their shell. And then sapphires, they just want to know about fun. Share fun stories, fun times, you know, things that they can vibe with you on, because that's what they're looking for, is playmates in the office who they can have fun with. So how you pitch each one of these people is going to be different. And you can kind of notice and observe via body language. Like for me, emeralds often won't look in the eye as often. They will lean back a little bit because they're waiting to process information. Rubies are often dressed more colorfully and louder in their voice overall. And the pearls can often be softer in their voice. So these are all just things that you can keep in mind when you're pitching. Know who you're pitching to, because how you pitch them is as important.
Yeah. That was a good gemology lesson. I appreciate it. Now you got me thinking about, I'll have to keep my mind straight. I think what's fascinating about what you just gave, though, truly, is that I think all of us are accumulation of everything you just said. So many people I've coached over the years, I'll start with, I used to be a lawyer, because that tells them I'll keep your, and I always say, that means I'll keep your confidentiality. That's number one. It's actually usually how I pitch myself, because it usually establishes trust pretty early. But two, I'll say, tell me about your journey to this point and where you're heading next. And so often it's the pearl part where they feel heard by one, but it's that joyous part that comes out like, well, here's where I'm going, right? That's what you want to get to. And so I think we're all a homogeny of all. And I think one of the things that you want to get to, certain people put up the veneer, you know, I often get asked introvert or extrovert, who's better. I think introverts are better because they spend more time practicing and thinking about it. Extroverts are just, so I think that there's something to be said. And once again, I'm saying 100 times, I'll bookend this episode on this. I want you to practice. And I lied before. You're right. There's a wrong way to do it, for sure. You know, there is. There's a terrible, awful way to do it. I would argue most people do it wrong. You know who does it right? The people who are passionate about what they're talking about, who are confident in what they're talking about, and who tailor their pitch to the audience in which they're speaking. After that, they're going to talk about why they're great. And we didn't talk about this enough today, but, you know, past successes that might relate to that individual, tangible things that they can grab onto. So many of these elements are important. But lastly, don't leave out the personal story. If you're an immigrant, tell your immigrant journey. If you are a recovering alcoholic, you can tell that journey. It doesn't matter. There's no dark or light here. There's only the desire to make a connection and desire to have people want to learn more. That is the goal of the pitch. I'm going to use it. If you think about an elevator pitch, it's like this. You got 30 seconds to pitch yourself. What you truly want is that as the doors close, the person puts their hand in the door and says, one more thing, can I get your contact information? It's that. You want to give them a reason. What does that look like in real life? Hey, let's follow up for real. Let's reconnect down the line. And have your phone ready, by the way. You know, I joke around people when I lived in LA. I didn't realize that just let's grab lunch was people's way of saying goodbye. It took me a long time to realize they were just saying goodbye. But one of the way I made a lot of friends over my lifetime was, yeah, great, let's do it. Let's get in the calendar. Find ways to follow up to deliver. So,
and yes. If I may add something, Brandon, especially in this time of COVID, you know, you might meet somebody socially distancing out on a walk, you know, in the canyons or at a grocery store, and people might not feel safe sharing a card. So one thing I learned years ago is in the way that you would put a contact info in your phone, put your own contact info, Jennifer K. Hill, cell phone number, email address. And then when you meet a new person, you just hit share contact, you text that to them, and boom, now they have your contact info just like they would a virtual business card. And it's a really quick and down and dirty, easy way.
And AirDrop works for that too. And LinkedIn, actually, you can connect with everyone on LinkedIn via if you make it searchable. So there's all these little tips, all these ways to micro connect and macro connect. Use them. My favorite LA story is I met Tim Robbins and I was so nervous about meeting him. I just said, nice to meet you. I'm a big fan. And I ran away. And he said, oh, and I said, you changed my life. And he said, well, stop. How did I change your life? And I told him that there was a poster I had in my old office. It said, fear will keep you prisoner. Hope will set you free. And my mom had passed away and I was in a job for my entire life for a decade that I was afraid to leave. But once I lost everything. I had to turn to hope. And I looked at that poster every day until I had hope to leave. So thank you. And then I started walking away. And I always joke around, if Tim Robbins ever offers you a hug, take it. It's the best hug on earth. He just envelops you and then he makes you feel safe. And then we made a movie together. Now that last part is not true at all. The Hollywood is not real. But I do think at the end of the day, you got to offer a little bit of you if you want people to offer, you know, that connection that you have. So my suggestion, our tip, takeaway, practice this. Practice on friends, relatives. Think about what you have to offer. How are you going to help people? Tailor your pitch. And lastly, you know, it's a good ending. Turn to hope, not fear. This stuff is scary. But entrepreneurs like Jennifer and the entrepreneurs I know, they've overcome their fear because they have hope first. And if you have hope, you can instill hope in others. And if you can instill hope in someone, they'll want to buy what you're selling.
So beautiful, Brandon. I couldn't agree more. It is about that hope and bringing, like we said in the beginning, I think that the takeaway too for this is remember that whatever you say, say it from your heart, say it with authenticity, say it with all of the gusto that you have, because whatever you say, even if you fumble over your words or you don't say the perfect quote unquote pitch, that's what's going to have people resonate with you is your humanness, your authenticity, and your passion for what you do. So we invite you to go out there, practice your pitching. You can use the model that I was taught, which is, you know how X. Well, what I do is Y, and here's how I do it. So that was the way I was taught years ago. But go out there and practice. Find your style. Find your panache. And practice it in different scenarios. Practice it with your friends and family, and certainly in interviews. And we wish everybody so much good luck out there. This is, again, we're coming into almost the end of the series here of the special A to Z, how to land your ideal job. We would love to hear feedback from you on how this has been going and what your favorite episodes have been. So feel free to leave us any comments on the Facebook Live on LA Talk Radio, or feel free, please, to comment or rate us on iTunes or any of the other places where you can find the show. So we're so grateful that... Did you have thoughts?
One more thing. I mean, our email is what again, Jennifer?
Getyourselfthejob@gmail.com.
So email us too. Email us your resume. Email us your pitches. Email us anything that you want us to look at, and we will take the time to review it. I just want to offer that. So if you're in service to us, we're in service to you. We're also on all the places you can find us. But email us. Reach out. We want to connect with you.
Yeah, thank you so much, everybody. It's been a pleasure having you here with us. We're so grateful that you tuned in and wishing you an incredible rest of your week.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.